Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
It's been a good minute since I've done this series. I know. People are probably the scariest thing on the planet. It's about time we take a break from some of those supernatural bumps in the night and take a look at some of the more creepy and everyday dangers that we seem to forget about. Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. It's good to see you made it back for another episode. Today we are going to be sharing some creepy and allegedly true stories sent in by viewers just like you. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, whether it be a creepy story with a person, or maybe even a cryptid, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. Before we get into today's video, I just wanted to let you guys know that I am currently giving away a few Swamp Dweller merch items. Basically, all you have to do to enter is hit the like button on this video, comment down below your favorite Swamp Dweller scary story of all time. It has to be a specific one, don't just say deep woods or cryptid. Third, be sure you're subscribed. And follow me on Twitter, at iSwampDweller. You'll be able to find all of these steps and everything more in the pinned comment and description down below. I'll be giving away pretty much whatever you want from the merch store, you can choose. It can be a face mask, a hoodie, a mug, a shirt, whatever. I just wanted to do this as a quick thank you guys for supporting the swamp through the quarantine and much more. Anyways, let's get into these allegedly true and disturbing stories that'll keep you up tonight. This takes place nearly 20 years ago but remains fresh in my mind. It was early November in Illinois. It was an unseasonably warm day, My girlfriend, best friend, and I decided in the spur of a moment that we would go camp outside of town. It was near a creek, but the only way to get there was on a dirt road. We got kind of a late start, seeing as it was so unplanned. After grabbing some supplies and stopping by my friend's girlfriend's job to invite her to join us after she got off, we finally arrived. A really strong cold front had come through shortly after, and the sun had already set. We frantically gathered firewood and kindling before the fast approaching darkness set in. I finally got a decent fire going as the last bit of light faded away. The wind behind the cold front was very blustery. The three of us sat around the fire talking, laughing, and reminiscing. A few hours went by, and my girlfriend said she was cold and tired, and got in the car and started it, and turned on the heat. My friend had brought an old boombox that had been turned on to maximum volume. What happened next still haunts me. Where we were, it was a narrow strip of trees on either side of the creek, and cornfields beyond as far as the eye could see. Definitely further than yelling distance. The nearest house was at least 10 miles away, if I had to guess. Out of the inky darkness across the creek, I heard a female voice scream, "Help me!" I heard it very clearly over the radio, and gusty winds, even though it sounded like she was far away. I looked over at my friend, whose eyes were as big as dinner plates. He quickly turned off the radio. I didn't have to ask, but I did anyway. "Did you hear that?" I asked, already knowing the answer. "Yeah, it sounded like a girl yelling." I ran to the car to check on my girlfriend. The sound came from the opposite direction, but she was my first concern. She was soundly asleep. I grabbed a flashlight from the car and shone it in the direction that I heard the noise. I yelled into the darkness, "Hello!" No response. Me and my friend both shouted into the void, "Is someone out there?" My next thought was a mountain lion, as they are spotted occasionally around here. We stood there sweeping the light back and forth, seeing nothing, trying to decide whether to investigate or to flee. I shouted once more, but got no response. We decided to put out the fire and go back to town and call the police. I woke my girlfriend and let her know we were leaving in a hurry and began packing it in. The wind had died down and the radio was off. I heard it again, louder and closer and much more clearer than the first time.
"Help me!"
Definitely a woman's voice right across the creek, maybe 50 feet from us. I began to shake from fear and adrenaline. I guided the flashlight toward the voice, my stomach twisted over with what I expected to see. To my surprise, there was nothing. Just more empty darkness. This was a relief, but it didn't last long. I didn't figure there was any reason to ask in vain if someone was there. I just continued packing. This time the scream came from directly behind the car. This made my blood run cold. My friend and I made a mutual decision to abandon everything not already in the car and reluctantly leave the fire and get away from there as quickly as possible. Before we could get to the car, I heard the scream one more time right behind me near the fire. We reported the incident to the police. They of course found nothing but smoldering embers and the remainder of our belongings. The cops scolded us for leaving the fire burning and told us to go back the next day and clean up our mess. Then he shared an interesting fact. That place was the location of a massacre in which 12 people, including women and children, were killed before Illinois was a state. I'm not saying it was a ghost, but it was something I have no explanation for. For Christmas, my parents and I decided to go up to this track. It's out in the bush, 10 or so minute drive from town. There's a massive quarry, a small track you can go down, and a pretty long track that people often walk or ride up. If we have the time, we walk up the long track, but today, we walked up the rock face and explored the quarry to try and find some snakes and lizards. We were there for maybe 20 or so minutes when my mom suddenly got a weird feeling. She said that she didn't feel like there was a snake or a lizard, but something else. She felt that something was just off. I don't know if I was playing off her anxiety or the feeling, but I got an off feeling as well. As we got closer to the car, my mom pointed at some bones. My mind went to a big cat or panther. That's just the feeling I got for whatever reason. Like how on the rock face by myself while my parents were in the quarry, I got the feeling that there was a snake near me. The closer I got to the car, the more off I felt. My mom felt better closer to the car, oddly enough. I don't know why, but instead of going through the designated entryway, I moved to the left a little and walked over some of the big rocks instead and moved straight to the car. And instead of going to the left-sided car like I normally do, I moved to the right. My mom unlocked the door, and I couldn't get in quicker. While I stayed in the car, my mom opened the boot to grab something, while my dad moved to the right, where there was a bit of a ditch and gully and more dense bush. I kept on looking out the left of my window, if that means anything. Soon, my mom and dad got in the car, and dad said that he had gotten a weird feeling too. For some reason after that, my mind shouted body. He said the closer he got to the ditch and gully, the worse of a feeling he got. Now, it's one thing for us to all get a weird feeling, but everybody felt weird around the same exact spot in the trail. And the fact that my dad got a weird feeling too, I don't know. We talked for a few minutes and my mom said she felt like we were being watched, and my dad and I said something about wild dogs. We left a few minutes later and drove slowly to try and see something. We really felt like there was something there watching us as we drove, and it was only on the left side, not the right. At some point I had felt sick and almost dreadful, but it left once we left. Since my mind sort of went to a big cat / panther, I decided to search up big cat sightings, and what do you know, there definitely was a big cat sighted in August of this year. Now, maybe that's not too weird for Australia, there are often big cat sightings over there, but for Tasmania, I'd like to hear anyone's thoughts, feelings, or opinions. I have also thought that it could have just been a creepy person staring at us as well. This has happened quite a few times in this quarry, and there are a lot of unsolved crimes out here too. So maybe it was just, you know, our subconscious telling us that there was something wrong and we got it out there just in time. I don't know. When I was 16 years old, I lived in a very small house almost in the middle of nowhere. The road was literally houses on the right side and a giant empty field on the left side. We were renting the house at the time, and because our landlords lived in a different state, we had to give the rent money to their son who lived on the house next to us. I know it's a bit weird, but that's what it was. I won't give his actual name, so I'll just call him Sam. Now, Sam seemed like a nice man. He was older, in his 40s or 50s, and he was a super friendly neighbor. If something in the house broke, he fixed it and never really charged us a dime. He helped us out many times and never gave us a hard time for rent. I was, and still am, very shy. Sam would try to talk to me, and I would only reply with short answers and try to get away as quick as possible. My parents told me I was just paranoid and should be nicer to him, but something told me I should just stay away. Things started to get weird when he would show up at my house when I was alone. Both of my parents worked late and I was often home alone after school. I always stayed inside, kept the doors locked, and didn't answer the door for anyone I didn't know. He would come to the house and asked if I wanted to go to the store with him. He offered to buy me ice cream and stuff, and I always said no. The random visit stopped for a few weeks, until he started riding his four-wheeler to the house. He would ask if I wanted to ride with him, to which I would reply no. I told him multiple times I wasn't allowed to leave the house, to which he just said, "Just call your parents and tell them you're with a friend." I said no again, and basically just shut the door in his face. Things continued to get even creepier when summer rolled around. I used to like sitting outside on the swing and listening to music. It was hot as hell outside, so of course I wore a tank top and shorts. Sam would come over and ask if I wanted ice cream or something like that. Of course, I said no. More four-wheeler ride offers came along, and I eventually told my parents. I told them that Sam made me feel incredibly uncomfortable, and if they could ask him to not come over to the house unless they were there. They said okay, but it seems like they kind of just brushed me off. The final nail in the coffin was when my mom came home from work and started telling me not to wear shorts and a tank top outside anymore. I asked her why, and she replied, "Because Sam just asked me for a picture of you in a bikini." She told me she refused to give him a picture like that, and when she asked why, he told her, "What are you gonna do with a dirty old man?" when we confronted our actual landlords about their son, it caused a huge argument, to the point to where I'm pretty sure that is the entire reason we moved. I heard my mom arguing on the phone one night, and she said something along the lines of, "We will call the cops, leave our daughter alone." I'm a grown woman now, and I've since moved out of my parents' house. My parents live in a much nicer, much bigger house out in the country now. To this day, I don't have a clue what happened to Sam, and I really don't care. I sometimes have to drive by my old house, and a new family has moved in. I pray that they don't have a teenage daughter, and if they do, I hope Sam is gone, or we'll just leave them alone. When I was 16, I had just got my first car and had it about 3 weeks. This guy walks up to me at a gas station and asks to use my phone. Naive me, and trying to be nice, I let him use it, but he walks away for a minute and then walks back with an older guy. I didn't know at the time he had taken my SIM card out of the phone. Then, they get into the back seat of my car. A friend of mine was in the front, and he asked if I would give them a ride up the street. At this point, I was kind of nervous and just wanted them gone, so I thought this would get rid of them. It was literally only a minute drive to this bar, so I figured, okay, let me just do what they want and have them gone. They were kind of intimidating, especially to a 16-year-old me. But as I started to drive, he says take this right and go to this road, which happened to be the road I live on, so I thought, cool, I will drop them off and be right back home. Well, I get to the house they wanted to, but then another guy comes up. A thugged out guy, sorry if that sounds not great, but that's the only way I could think of how to describe him. He gets into my car and they say take us to a Wendy's and bring us back. It was like 5 minutes away, so I figured I would get these guys out of my car. So I take them through the drive-thru, get food, and start to head back to my house. But he says no, take us up the street. At this point, I tell them, is this it? I need to be getting home. And he's like, yeah, just drop us off, it's like 5 minutes away. I still haven't gotten my phone back, by the way. I'm too scared to ask at this point. That's the least of my worries, really. So I drive and get us up to this dirt road. I'm really freaking out now. We come to an area surrounded by trees, kind of a circle big enough to turn around in. So I start to turn around because there is no house. At that point, he reached up from the back seat and throws my car into park and grabs me. My friend jumps out and tries to run. One of the other guys gets out and hits him, but I guess he got away. It was dark and hard to see. Then he pulls out a gun and tells me to get out. I'm so freaking scared at this point. Like, scared for my life, thinking I'm about to die. He hits me in the mouth with the gun and tells me to give him everything. I had some money in my pocket and I hand it to them. They all get in the car and drive off. I'm miles away from anywhere and start walking, no phone, freaking out. I call up my friend's name and hear nothing. I walked a few miles to the gas station and cops are there. I guess my friend made it there and called, and I called my dad and told him what had happened. It was the scariest moment of my life, and I definitely should be dead. My face was all busted up when I got to the police station. I tell them everything, and they think we're buying drugs from these guys and are trying to get them to tell me who it is. Then they pull out a book of pictures. After like 30 minutes, I see the one who hit me. I knew it was him instantly and told them. A couple weeks later, I hear that he had stolen another car, got pulled over, ends up stealing a cop car, and then is chased down. He gets out and tries to cut across a train track and a train coming and falls, and it severs his leg. Justice was served. But it doesn't end there. Years later, I saw him in a bar with crutches hobbling around, and I felt so satisfied. Then, a few more years later go by, and he gets hit by a car and was killed. I know this is hard to believe, and whether anyone believes it or not, I don't really care. It is a very true event that happened to me. I should be dead, but I'm not, and he is. The events of this story took place over the course of a few nights, but before we get there, I need to provide a little bit of backstory. My husband and I just moved to New York City, like right in the heart of the city. The apartment was breathtaking. I kept thinking that it was a loft apartment you would see in a movie or television show. My husband was fortunate enough to land a well-paying job that allowed us to afford this beautiful apartment. My favorite part was the view. At night, you could see all the lights from the city out of the windows. It did not take long for my husband to make some friends at work. He is a very social person, and being in sales for a decade makes him very easy to strike up conversations with anyone. almost a year into living in the city, we had our weekend crew that we would hang out with routinely. We would have dinner, play games, or just have some drinks with Becky and Jim, as well as another couple, Jason and Liz. My husband's best friend from the city was a man named Eric, though. Eric did not have a significant other, but never came alone. He always had a friend that he would bring. He always would joke with me and my husband, "Don't worry, guys, never have to worry about me being the third wheel." This turned into a reoccurring joke, and Eric was almost always referred to as the third wheel. One night after one of our get-togethers, my husband and I were getting ready for bed. We talked for a little while, but I'm pretty sure I fell asleep mid-sentence. I woke up at some point in the middle of the night. I don't think I actually looked at the time, but it was still dark out, so definitely before 5 a.m. if I had to guess. I heard a noise, and I know that is what woke me up. I just laid in bed feeling a bit uneasy and looked up in the dark room. I thought I could see the figure of some kind of person in the corner, but I wasn't sure. The more I tried to focus, the more harder it was to see. I felt as though if I could almost hear something, like breathing or wheezing. After a few moments, I felt much better and chalked it up to some kind of vivid nightmare and rolled back over to bed. I was too scared in the moment to look and did not want to wake my husband. The next night came, and the same story. We went to bed at around 11 p.m. and did not tell my husband about the events from the night before. Once again, I was awoken in the middle of the night, and this time I looked at the time. It was shortly after 4 a.m. I could for sure hear breathing this time. I looked around the room from the bed, but this time I could not see any figures like I did the night before. I could just hear the breathing, and it felt so close. I tried waking my husband, but he was out cold. I didn't try awfully hard because he had to wake up in about an hour for work. I didn't sleep well the rest of the night, and I woke him up in the morning and did not want to stay in the bedroom alone when he left. I moved to the living room and slept on the couch for a couple of hours. The day was miserable. I couldn't shake the weird feeling for the entire day. Around 2 in the afternoon, I took a shower. When I turned the shower off and was drying my hair in the bathroom, I heard something from outside the bathroom door. I froze in paranoia. I listened with my ear to the door, but I heard nothing. Finally, I worked up the courage to leave the bathroom and felt a minor moment of relief when I was in fact still alone in the apartment. Shortly after 5, my husband had come home from work. When I told him about the event of the last 2 nights, at first he laughed as if I were telling him a joke. Once he realized how freaked out I actually was, he then began to try and rationalize what I could have been seeing and hearing. I have to say I was insulted because he suggested that maybe I had drunk too much, but that was not the case whatsoever. He then said in a reassuring voice, "If it happens again, just wake me up and I'll search the room." This actually did give me some relief that I was able to talk to him about it. However, I was still anxious that I would hear or see something again. That night came quickly, and I was so tired from the previous night that I fell asleep even though I was practically petrified to go to bed. Again, right around 3:30 in the morning, I woke up to the sound of breathing, and it was undeniable at this point. I looked around the room and saw nothing, just as the previous few nights. I woke up my husband and told him to listen. He said he could hear the breathing too. He sprang from bed and turned on the light. There was thankfully nobody standing in the room. That brief moment of solace ended quickly when the nightmare came true. My husband walked over to the walk-in closet, and emerging from under the bed was our friend Eric. He sprinted to my husband, who was now in the closet, and tackled him. I screamed in a panic and absolutely freaking out. I jumped from the bed and tried to make a run for the door. My plan was to just yell in the hallway until someone hopefully heard me. I did not even make it to the door before Eric had caught me. I screamed as loud as I could, and thankfully in that quick moment my husband sprang out and tackled Eric. I ran to the cell phone and called the police. My husband is a fairly large man and was able to get Eric to the ground and keep him there until the cops showed up. To the police's credit, they showed up pretty fast. My husband only had a few minor scrapes and bruises, but had a pretty big knot on his head. When the cops were arresting Eric, we could hear him saying, "I didn't want to be the third wheel anymore. I didn't want to be the third wheel anymore." What is even more disturbing is that he told the police he was inside our apartment for a couple of days. He had somehow stolen my husband's key and made a copy of it. He was apparently breaking into the apartment for weeks but had been staying during the night for the last few days. I am not sure why he did not try anything while we were sleeping, or any of the times I or my husband were alone in the apartment. It still freaks me out thinking that this man was inches from where I slept. We are now back in my hometown, and not living in the city anymore. The terror you feel being trapped that high up in the sky, with nowhere to run, has made me extremely claustrophobic. You never know what people are capable of, even people you consider your close friends. The police did inform us that Eric stated he didn't intend to hurt us, but the look in his eyes told a completely different story. I don't fly anymore. I used to. A whole bunch, actually. It was a big part of my job to fly around the country to pitch investment prospects at meetings held for wealthy hedge fund managers. It was a cushy job. I mean, it paid far, far more than it was worth. But now I work from home, and I drive everywhere. I'm talking everywhere. I live in New York City, but my parents live down in Florida since they retired. And yeah, I drive down there to see them. 3 times a year sometimes. It's a pretty hellish drive, but I'd rather drive all the way and get stomach flu from bad roadside tacos than fly. And now, I'll tell you why. It was a regular flight from LaGuardia down to Houston, another business trip to finance flirt with oil, rich investors down in Texas. I was sat in a window seat in business class. Takeoff was pretty normal. Everything was peachy keen. Nothing I hadn't done 100 times before as I thumbed through the in-flight magazine and browsed the drinks menu. I had to get up at like 5:30 in order to make that flight, and I've never been much of a morning person. So as soon as I was able, I shut the window flap next to me, closed my eyes, and tried to catch a few Z's so I'd be fresh as possible for the afternoon meeting. Then, just as I'm about to drift off, I hear a loud pop noise. In my weary state, I actually thought it was a champagne bottle being opened by some celebratory suit who was opting for the fizz breakfast. I looked around, and no one has a bottle. There is no attendant with an ice cream bucket, nothing like that. Then, some horrible idea pops in my head, and in order to belay my seemingly irrational fears, I slide open to check the plane's left wing engine. I remember expecting it to be fine. Nothing had ever happened on a flight before, even though I had those little flashes of fear previously. But it was not fine. The popping sound had been exactly what I had feared. There was smoking billowing from the engine, a thick stream of dark vapor that trailed along as we flew. I grabbed an attendant and silently pointed out the window, not wanting to raise too much of a panic. When she looked, she turned pale, then rushed up the aisle in the direction of the cockpit. Moments later, others were noticing. Cries of panic started sounding all along the plane as more and more people noticed the danger we were in. People were rushing over to the left side of the plane, looking out the windows and screaming, all while the air hostesses aboard were trying everything they could to keep people calm. Right before the terror reached fever pitch, the pilot comes over the intercom. I think it was the weirdest, most surreal moment of my life. When people were losing their freaking minds, the captain was calm to the point of seeming bored. I suppose that's just the level of training they receive. The captain tells everyone to keep calm, to go back to their seats, and that the plane will be making an emergency landing at the nearest airport, which by the time was an airport in Norfolk, Virginia. We actually landed just fine, and the only remotely bad thing to really happen that day was that I had to rearrange the investment meeting. But I swear to God, part of me thought that plane was about to become a fireball. As the engine exploded, and we plummeted towards the earth at 500 miles an hour. It was probably the most terrifying experience I've ever endured. And despite me trying to, I was never able to get on a plane ever again. So like I said, I drive everywhere now. And as much as it sucks, it's better than getting the cold sweats and panic attacks from sitting on a runway somewhere, just waiting for the engines to go up in flames. In July of 2018, my family and I went to my aunt and uncle's house in Maryland. They go on vacation for a weekend, and they let us stay at their house. They live like 10 minutes away from Baltimore,
so we usually go there for a day and go back to the house later. Everything was fine until the third night. When we got back to the house, my dad and brother went upstairs because they were tired. My mom and I went into my uncle's office to go on his computer to see what we could do the next day. We heard some strange noises. My mom just assumed they were house noises, but the noises seemed a bit heavy to be house noises. My mom went to the bathroom and I sat at the computer looking at attractions when I heard my uncle's dog growling from the living room. She only growls or barks when she sees someone she doesn't recognize, so I got a little scared. My mom came out of the bathroom and I told her the dog is growling at something. She went to the living room to check on the dog and everything seemed normal except for one thing. The lamp was on, but the thing about that was, is I remember seeing it unplugged entirely. The lamp is also in the corner behind the giant couch, and the cord has a switch on it to turn it on or off, but the switch was closer to the floor. It would take a lot of effort to plug it in and turn it on. She assumed it was me and turned it off, but I kept telling her I didn't turn it on at all. I decided to go to bed, which I kind of regret doing. I fell asleep pretty fast, but I woke up at 3 in the morning to a strange sound. I just kept hearing a squeaky mattress noise over and over again. I knew it wasn't my parents because I heard my dad snoring, and I knew my brother wasn't making that noise because I heard him snoring as well. All of our bedroom doors were open, so it was pretty easy to hear, but I was the only one hearing it. I started hearing the dog growling viciously from the living room. I was covered in my sweat, and my fear was rising. I then heard footsteps coming from the attic right above my room. I was wide awake at that point, and was gonna wake up my parents, but since I was so scared, I didn't want to move. Eventually, all the noises stopped, but the dog was still viciously growling at something or even someone. She stopped growling after about 5 minutes. Everything was seemingly fine after that, but I had no interest in falling back asleep, and didn't get out of bed until I saw my brother get out of bed at sunrise. I asked him if he heard anything at all at 3 in the morning, but he said no. I also asked my parents if they heard anything, and they also said no. My mind was blown, and I thought I was going crazy. For the rest of the week, everything was fine, and that dog kept growling at something every once in a while. I kind of wish I got up out of bed to see what was squeaking, but I was also way too scared. I also wish I got up to see what the dog was growling at. But no way in hell was I going to go up into that attic. I don't know if I was just hallucinating, witnessing paranormal activity, or what. But I definitely don't know, and it definitely was not a dream.
Thanks for listening to these creepy and allegedly true stories sent in by viewers just like you. Honestly, story number 6 has to be my favorite one this time. I have pretty much the same exact irrational fear, and I just can't tell you how many times I've hit air pockets in planes and it just drops hundreds of feet suddenly. Honestly, I would rather drive. If you like these stories, please be sure to hit that like button as it helps me out a ton in that YouTube algorithm. The more likes this video gets, the more YouTube promotes it. If you're new to the swamp, why not join us? Hit the subscribe button and turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day, on all things natural and supernatural. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that helps keep this channel going. If you're on the go, you can download and listen to your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and just about everywhere else you find podcasts online. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting the Swamp the way you do. As a special thank you, I wanted to do something special and give away some free Swamp Dweller merchandise. So that means anything from my merch store. All you have to do to enter is hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, comment down below your favorite scary story from the channel. It has to be a specific story, don't just say deep woods or cryptid stories. And 4, be sure you're subscribed and following me on Twitter. You can find all that information in the pinned comment and description down below. I can see everybody who is following and everyone who's subscribed. I will be picking at random, and I will probably be picking 5 different people. I will start picking those winners on the next video. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.